The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. The United Nations Commission on Narcotic Drugs held its 68th session in Vienna, Austria, back in March. One of the side events, sponsored by Dianova International, which was held at this year's CND, was entitled Breaking Barriers, A Gender Perspective on Substance Use. It examined gender-specific challenges faced by women in substance use treatment and policymaking. First, let's hear the presentation by Dr. Karina Giacomello, an academic and researcher based in Mexico who's a consultant with the Pompidou Group.
So, as I was saying, my presentation is part of the project Children Whose Parents Use Drugs of the Pompidou Group, which looks at children and parents in their own right and in their relationship. Between 2020 and 2024, we developed a vast amount of research, publishing five ISBN publications, which include practices from about 20 countries, the voices of women, the voices of children, and also more recently, and I think it will be published this year, we also worked with men who use substances and are fathers. So basically looking at the intersection of masculinity, parenthood, and substance use. So part of the aim of this Pompidou Group project is to make sure that gender and parenting is mainstreamed in drug policies and in social services working with families. What are some of the highlights of the project, some of the findings that I'm sure are shared by the other presenters and people who work with people who use, with the persons who use the substances? Well, first of all, usually, generally speaking, and of course, some generalizations will be made because of time constraints, drug-related services and harm reduction services tend to focus on the individual. So the family tends to be overlooked, children in particular, as well as partners and grandparents that are also a very present element in for people who use the substances. So there is an invisibilization of other people, and the individual tends not to be seen through a gender lens and not taken into account through their parenting roles either. Social services, on the other hand, may be uninformed about substance and substance dependence, and that can lead to the reproduction of stigmatizing language and attitudes. And the impacts of drug use on children and other family members is not always taken into account and addressed by services, which has implications, of course. Even if gender roles impact on the way people relate to substances and how we also how our needs and strengths are met by services, gender is still not mainstreamed in services. And that happens for men, for women, for non-binary people, and so on. So basically what we try to do with this work is to visibilize how gender could and should be mainstreamed. We know that women who use substances face higher stigma and higher barriers to access services and are usually underserved. At the same time, there is a sort of ambivalence towards women who are mothers and use substances. They're more visibilized by services, but at the same time, there is a higher risk for stigma because they are not seen as fit for motherhood. And in the case of men, on the other hand, in this publication, we will be published this year with the participation of 94 men from 12 countries. They also call for the need to be more seen in their parenting role and to be more engaged by services. So it's also important to look more at the intersection between masculinity and fatherhood, because still it tends not to be seen by drug-related services. Men are not seen as gendered and not as parents, often because they are not there either. But the same happens with the social services. So even if there is more knowledge and awareness and research, also with people with lived experience, in order to visibilize the intersection of gender with the substance use and parenting, still there is a sort of silos approach from services and not necessarily always a gendered approach when working with parents and people in general. I would like to finish with the interventions of a father, A mother and one of the children who participated in the Pompidou Group's studies. As you might imagine, with all this, you know, research and participation of so many countries, so many people, many recommendations have been developed, and they are all available in the publications, which can all be downloaded for free. But I really wanted to bring in the voices of the people that generously participated in the project, and particularly to share the testimonies that indicate how a mother, a father, and a child are basically asking for the same thing. And that same thing is integrated services for families. So Elias, a father from Czech Republic, says, "I think the help needs to be comprehensive, under one roof, that it really should be from a help type, like you have comprehensive child and family care, the legal help, but also with accompaniment, representation, that kind of reassurance of rights and responsibilities at the same time." Now, Alexis from Greece, and his allies heard me say, read these testimonies many times, but it's very effective. Alexis, 14 years old, said, "Teachers and services must be patient with the children. They must hear the voice of the child and the silence of the child. It helps to be supported in everything without the danger of losing your house and being in an institution. It helps if the child can have a quiet home, a therapist for the parents, a school that understands, and a network that supports with food, clean clothes, a clean house, quiet sleep, studying, going to school on time." And Eugenie from Switzerland said to us in the publication We Are Warriors, "People still believe too much that mothers who have drug dependence do not want to take care of their children. I would dream of a house where everything is together for these mothers, for the fathers too. I think there are outpatient ways of dealing with parents and that would do much less harm, because there is no drug addicted mother who wants to harm her child." I would just like to point out to conclude that in the research we did with fathers who use substances, we didn't find a single service where single fathers could be with their children, as opposed to what happens with mothers. There are still not many drug treatment residential centers where the women can live with their children, but at least they exist. For fathers, there was none, and there were 7 single dads who participated in the study. One of them, just one, was living alone with his 10-month baby in a therapeutic community in Cyprus. So basically, I think that this work gives us many tips on what kind of practices exist out there, what kind of recommendations and policy changes can be done, and that definitely, even if there's more and more awareness on the need to mainstream gender, there is still a lot of work to do.
That was Dr. Karina Giacomello, an academic and researcher based in Mexico, who's a consultant with the Pompidou Group, speaking on a panel entitled Breaking Barriers, a Gender Perspective on Substance Use, which was organized by Dianova International as a side event at the 68th session of the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Let's hear another panelist from Breaking Barriers, a Gender Perspective on Substance Use. Zara Snap is co-founder and director of Instituto RIA, a Mexico-based organization that undertakes high-quality research, highlighting and proposing innovations in order to advocate for public policies within a social justice framework.
So I wanted to talk about a few terms, I think just in the sense of how we speak about these issues. So having a gender intersectional perspective is really thinking about how gender intersects with other systems of oppression, whether that's racial, whether that's class. And how do we include women who use drugs and intersectional approach in the design and implementation of programs. Also from Latin America, how we talk about full spectrum harm reduction is really not just focused on consumption, but rather on the full production chain and how the harms of prohibition, how do we also reverse and not repeat and repair the harms of prohibition, which can include the criminalization of people, which can include abuse by authorities, which has oftentimes a much greater impact on people who use drugs than just the possible health harms they might perceive from using a substance. So this is something that's really being pushed for the last 10 years or so, beginning with Mexico. And also one of the things that we do with trying to keep a gender perspective is how we use inclusive language. If we can speak in a different way, which obviously in Spanish and more gendered languages, it happens a lot more than in English. But if we can make people feel as comfortable as possible, why not? It doesn't cost any of us anything. It means that one more person here feels like they're heard or seen. It's also, when we talk about a feminist perspective, It's how do we identify, understanding that the idea of feminism and feminist perspectives might be different culturally, and that there's lots of cultures and women who don't embrace this idea of feminist, many times because of cultural differences. And we get this a lot of from the pueblos originarios, from indigenous groups in Mexico. But how do I identify necessities to really exercise human rights, promote collective emancipation, and the development of personal autonomy? And then there's a term that's been being used a lot recently. It's called this narco-feminism. And it's something that, at least from Latin America, and when I talk with colleagues in Latin America, it's very hard. It's a hard term for us to swallow because it's connecting us to drug trafficking. It's connecting us to a public enemy. It's connecting us to the other that is really something that's been built up into our social consciousness by government narratives, that those are bad. And so this idea of, you know, if anything, we're trying to push apart the term and disintegrate the term narco and what that really means, because it's been used to justify human rights violations. So what could be, and it's a term that's been very pushed by certain groups, so what could be some of the alternatives so that we can find consensus, so we can find terms that work in all of our settings? So some of the things that in Instituto Ria, as I said, we do research and advocacy, and we also implement harm reduction interventions through our drug checking program, Check Out the Sustancia, where we're in festivals and also community settings, and where the majority of our team in Instituto Ria, we're 5 women. And some of the things we feel like we almost never speak about drug use and how it impacts you when you're menstruating. We don't talk about drug use among people who are pregnant or lactating, except to say, don't do it, when it's a reality that many women will continue to use during these periods in their life. So what does the research tell us? What do we really know about studies? What we know is that many of those studies were carried out 20, 30 years ago among women of low resources and who were already unable to provide their children with all of the comprehensive care that they would have wanted to give to that child. And so there might be other risk factors that were taken into account much beyond that they also consumed cannabis or they also used other drugs during these times. And especially around, you know, then how do we take the stories and really the knowledge? You know, we talk about compartir saberes, how do we share knowledge across women and across people who are pregnant or lactating to be able to share those stories beyond a scientific study, which is very hard to get approved by governments. And we're only beginning to see those studies emerge in jurisdictions where, for example, cannabis use is legal, and so you can create control groups, such as University of Washington, for example. We also almost never talk about how to incorporate daycares, play centers, or lactation rooms within health services offered to women who use drugs. We don't talk about how drug use might play a role in relieving maternity or other complex periods in the life of women and how there might be benefits to some of that use. How mental health and the mental load of mothers can influence quality of life. And so how do we reduce that as a means of also lifting up protective mechanisms? We don't talk about, and I'm so glad that on this panel we're talking about it, how stigma and discrimination within the harm reduction and drug policy movement towards women who use drugs can also be present. And so how do we shut those down, and how do we have a conversation about what that means? Or that we expect if women are pregnant or lactating that they're not going to participate actively in political life, no? And I brought my children to the CND every 2 years, like the first 2 years of their life, because they fly free. But it means what's the mental load that then that mother carries, because she has her child outside, or she has to bring a friend, or you have to, and all of those things for us to be able to continue on our professional growth. So we have a great differentiated impacts of women on women who use drugs. In Mexico, there are 3 times fewer free treatment centers for women than for men. Services don't take into account the roles of mothers and caretakers. And there's very little articulation or none between sexual health and drug services when we find great intersection between these two areas. Sexual violence in residential centers is a recurring practice, and there are few supervision mechanisms. Teen women are more likely to enter residential treatment centers, but with that comes new dynamics of violence and treatment models that don't adjust to the life cycle of women, and they can be counterproductive if they do face some sort of violence or some sort of abuse. The illegality of consumption and possession of psychoactive substances often obligate women to hide their consumption. And this is where then we see women are afraid of losing their children, they're afraid of being kicked out of their homes, if they're in social housing. And so we were seeing all of this, and we were asked by the National Institute of Women in Mexico to do a diagnostic and then create a model of care, which is some of the work that we do on building in models of care around harm reduction for people who use drugs, for men, women, people who use fentanyl, who use methamphetamine, which is the drug that's most increasing in Mexico. And so we did a survey with 598 women, obviously taking into account this was an online survey, so that people who don't have access to internet are able to respond. All of those, you know, possibilities. 30 of the 32 states in Mexico were represented in the survey. As we can see, the majority of them were between 24 and 29 years old, then 30 to 35. 44% were from Mexico City, 10% from the state of Mexico, and 6.4% from Aguascalientes. 95% were born in Mexico, so that means 5% were immigrant women. 81% were cisgender women. The median age was 31. 45% who responded works, 12% worked and studied, and 9% studied. And 22% were the principal support or caregiver of other people. So women are taking on these extra roles of caregiving. And so this diagnostic was also about just drug use in general. It didn't necessarily mean that you had to have sought treatment out. It was, tell us about your experiences, tell us what you've been, you know, how you've been experiencing this in your life. 157 of the women said that they did identify problematic use in the last year. Of those, only 29 sought help for problematic use. 128 did not seek help. And 118 didn't seek help, but said they would have if it didn't mean they had to abstain completely from using. So this means that harm reduction in the full spectrum and in the sense of that it does not require, and harm reduction never requires a person to change, but rather offers them options so that they can make choices about how they want to live their life, meets the people where they're at, they would have sought treatment if it didn't come conditioned. And this is important because in Mexico, there's many treatment centers, some of the only regulated treatment centers. If you go in and you have a relapse, you aren't allowed to go back. But then how do I continue? This is a natural, for how many times does somebody have to quit smoking to successfully quit smoking? 8, 9, 15 times, and they keep trying. And so most people find help for their problematic use in themselves, in their redes de apoyo, you know, in their networks. And so 9% were attended in, 9 of the 29 that sought help were attended in public health services, 19 in private health services, which also means that those are folks who have resources that it allows them to seek in public health in private services. And one was attended in a civil society organization. 85% of the women who responded this question, which was 514, did not inform health workers in hospitals or clinics about their use. There is no trust between health services and women who use drugs, especially if you are a caretaker and you think this might result in you losing your children or losing what freedom. You know, you might be getting arrested. And so, if we can't allow for treatment or for support that also includes not abstaining from use and that allows you to continue with your life, then we're not going to go to traditional health services. This is our drug checking service where we have a focus on women and young people, in people who are part of the diverse community, and we have a team that allows us to have open conversations. So we, for example, have done interventions with women who exercise sex work, teaching them how to use fentanyl test strips, or in parties of men who have sex with men. So some of the learnings, and this one I think it closes, is really about how we identify power relationships that are established in consumption spaces or supply of substances. So oftentimes women depend on men or their partners in order to supply them with the substance that they might want to choose. And so that person also decides how much or when. And this is something that we need to be able to figure out how that shifts. We need adequate and specific information on the effects of substances on women's bodies, and also in women's bodies when they're in these different forms of menstruation, menopause, you know, I'm talking to colleagues in here and who are passing through that, and we don't talk enough about it. I mean, in general, we don't talk enough about it, and then also when you add in drug use, we don't talk about it at all. It's necessary to normalize the attention to consumption by women who are mothers in health institutions, not as a situation that might result in the loss of your custody of your children or the loss of freedom. We have to eliminate sexual violence that could happen during consumption, and this is a big conversation we have in schools and in universities around consent, and a lot around alcohol use and consent. Alternative daycare must be developed for women who come with caregivers. In Mexico City, there's these Centros Colibri, which are inside utopias, which are these large public spaces that have lots of different services provided. And the Centros Colibri have a harm reduction focus, but then also they have daycare on site or gyms so that the kids can go be doing exercise. And the women have access to health services, including mental health services. This might be the first time in their life that a woman is offered psychological care. Inpatient centers are not compatible with the care work that women carry. It's not compatible with what they do in their families or with their children, or imagine a grandmother who might be using pills, and they don't have a place to go. Community and outpatient alternative must be supported without seeking abstinence only. We must foment self and collective care for women who use drugs. This is one of the main pillars of Instituto Correa, of how we really work on building collective care. The team should reflect the population we want to reach. So beyond peers, people who use drugs with technical knowledge, and peers should not be treated as peers, as less than, but rather they have even a greater wealth of knowledge. And honestly, I mean, at this point, there are so many people in the world who are using drugs and who are technical, professional people who can then provide these services. And we understand, and even the United Nations says, you know, the majority of people who use drugs in the world, 87%, you do so without creating a problematic use in their personal or private life. That means that there are a lot of people who can be designing, implementing, and working in drug policy and treatment and prevention and harm reduction and education without needing to necessarily be stigmatized for their use. And the end, which is something that in Instituto Ria and also with ATS we work on greatly, is around legal regulation with a social justice focus, because we also believe that it would democratize access, it would eliminate discriminatory practices and reduce stigma, in addition to increasing information available to historically vulnerable communities. This is part of guaranteeing human rights and building peace, at least in our countries, where a decrim model would not be sufficient, because we do have to also be talking about production. We have to talk about the women who work in coca cultivations, who are part of groups that are producing, and so how do we build in also, derechos laborales, working rights, how do we build in the rights that all of these folks would need, and especially to differentiate impacts on women.
That was Zara Snap, co-founder and director of Instituto Ria, speaking on a panel entitled Breaking Barriers, a Gender Perspective on Substance Use, which was organized by Dianova International as a side event at the 68th session of the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Another speaker on this panel was Ghana Dovbach, executive director of the Eurasian Harm Reduction Association.
For us, we believe that the gender-sensitive drug policy, it's the key, and they need to remove barriers to drugs, the drug services, and enhance policy effectiveness for women, men, and gender non-conforming people, wherever revolutionary it could sound nowadays. but that's our beliefs, and that EU leads internationally in advocating for gender-sensitive drug policies, and that's also important role of European Union to bring these values globally as well, and in these forums like CND, we need to hear more about this from EU. We as a CSFD identify gender as a key issue for EU drug policy, and it should be integrated and mainstreamed into all the policies. So we could not say gender is one part of the services, like gender-sensitive services, and that's it. But the gender perspective need to be mainstreamed everywhere and in all the policies. And we know that in comparison between the nowadays acting EU strategy 2021-2025, it's much more gender-oriented, and we have several mentioning and some several paragraphs specific about gender-sensitive approaches in comparison with previous. But now we have more challenges ahead, because it's civil society forum on drugs during the 2025 will have the big challenge to include the gender language and gender perspective, as well as the perspective of comprehensive approach and community and civil society participation into the new EU drug strategy plan. And that will not be easy. especially taking the political context. But that's our agenda, and that's why we existed as a civil society forum on drugs. So key recommendations, and they are here, were already being, it's mainstreaming gender across all policy areas and all the continuum of services and balanced services, develop trauma-informed and gender-sensitive interventions, and this trauma-informed referral to the mental health needs, which any women have in prevention or treatment and harm reduction. So that's actually one of the priority we need to focus on. Address institutional violence, including gender-based violence by law enforcement, and that's rather heavy issues for a lot of regions, not only my region, is Eastern Europe and Central Asia, but for a lot of regions in Europe. Expand women and gender non-conforming people only services, specific comforting services, strengthen training for practitioners and civil society on gender transforming services, means all the continuum services from prevention to rehabilitation, and combat stigma and discrimination, to improve service access, reinforce intersectionality, considering multiple vulnerabilities of LGBT people, sex workers, people living with different diseases, with HIV, and with different identities, national identities, religious identities. That's rather important part of intersectionality we need to take into account. Include LGBTQI plus community in policy design, connected with the drug use, and that's important story. I have plenty of stories from my region. Address the need of children whose parents use drugs, and that's actually already was addressed. Support and invest in peer-led interventions. Again, addressed, I'm summarizing, and ensure gender disaggregated data collection for policy monitoring and evaluation. It's strange that we need to advocate STEAM for this, but plenty of data have noticed this disaggregation and some specific on intersecting identities. So in time of crisis, which we face now, women face much more risks than other populations think men, because they are caretakers, they are responsible for the whole family, and the crisis, and economical crisis, and political crisis, social crisis, always like first hit women. So gender-based violence, mental health struggles, poverty, lack of essential health care, that's what we are facing in the moment of war, crisis, uncertainty, security crises, which we are now facing in the world. And women who use drugs, especially vulnerable because they are stigmatized and criminalized, and they are often denied care. So civil society, as we are, from the different angles, stands united to ensure gender-sensitive, human rights-based drug policies that provide access to comprehensive prevention care, harm reduction, treatment, rehab, and palliative care, ensuring protection and dignity for all.
That was Ghana Dovbach, Executive Director of the Eurasian Harm Reduction Association, speaking on a panel entitled Breaking Barriers, a Gender Perspective on Substance Use, which was organized by Dianova International as a side event at the 68th session of the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Century of Lies is a volunteer production for community radio and syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's AudioPort service. Please, support your local community radio station. Become a member. Become a volunteer. Find this edition of Century, along with an archive of past shows, at the Drug Truth Network website, drugtruth.net. You'll find a link there to subscribe to the Century of Lies podcast. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so
for
long.
The Drug Truth Network, so this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.